turns the corner, drives to the rack and packed it. Dante Exum, X, 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 triple X on that one, baby. Jazz by 9 with 55 seconds to play.
I don't think the people in Utah know what triple X means.
I know Tim McMahon does. That's one thing. That's one thing I'm sure he was able to deal with down in H-Town. How you doing, Timmy?
I don't even know what you mean by that, Dusty, but I'll take it as a compliment.
I didn't either.
I am doing fantastic, fellas. How are you? How about that coach performance by Quinn Snyder last night? My goodness.
Take away the sororities and everything is better in a hurry. I'm impressed, man. I think that the Jazz are moving the ball. They're funneling people into the lane where they can't do a whole lot. They let the Rockets shoot threes last night, wail away, and miss. And I was impressed. I don't think they're going to win a whole lot more games in this series, but at least they have that one in Houston.
Well, you know what? They'll make it interesting. And it's just funny. I was actually just ran into one of my favorite NBA scouts that I see here in Arenas around the league. I'm at the airport here in Houston. We're just talking about how the Jazz game plan from game one to game two was completely different. They scrapped really everything they do in terms of their normal motions and the ball movement, all that stuff, because they weren't getting any advantage there because the Rockets switched everything. And they went to quick hit and stuff. They went, quick and roll or pick and roll, slip and screens. And, Donovan Mitchell didn't shoot it well last night. He's only 6-21. That's the most impressive 6-21 performance I've ever seen for a rookie shooting guard forced to play point guard to come in, distribute the way he did with 11 assists, and then the dunk was just absolutely ridiculous at a key moment of the game. But they're getting Gobert rolling to the rim. That opens things up. Joe Ingles is getting wide open looks. I mean, I know the Thunder didn't get the memo, but he did lead the league in 3-point percentage. That's not a guy that you want to leave open. And then, look, holding the Rockets to only 37 attempts, you say only 37 three-point attempts, but for the Rockets, that's a low number. That's good work. And, fortunately for the Jazz, James Harden wasn't as hot as he was in game one. He was 2-10 from three instead of 7-12. But, the Jazz aren't just going to roll over and let it be easy on the Rockets. And your boy D'Antoni, he felt like the Rockets kind of coasted in that thing and got punched in the mouth and paid for it.
What do you expect as this thing travels back to Utah, Tim? I mean, a Thunder fan saw firsthand. I mean, that was an electric atmosphere. Those fans really embracing that team. Kind of feels to me like I see a split coming in Utah, and this thing goes back to Houston tied up.
Yeah, I picked Rockets in the six to start the series, and certainly I see no reason to budge off that. I tell you what, though, like you said, it's going to be an absolute madhouse in Utah. I mean, those Mormons get rowdy, boy, let me tell you. But if the Jazz are able to get game three, then you talk about an immense amount of pressure on the Rockets. And, obviously that's a team where it's championship or bust, top record in the league and all that. But, Chris Paul, as great as he is, the big kind of dark cloud hanging over his head has never been to a conference finals. And man, if they're down 2-1 with another game in Utah, that cloud's going to start storming.
How about with Ricky Rubio out, what Exum and Burks have been able to do? You mentioned that Mitchell played a lot of point guard position, but those guys have had to come in and play, and they've played pretty well.
Yeah, no, last night they were both great. Burks, you can never trust him, but he is, he was a lottery pick for a reason. I mean, he's a 6'6", really athletic guy. Other than Mitchell, he's the one guy on that team that can really kind of create for himself off the dribble. Certainly he plays at a fast pace. The problem is a lot of times he'll get out of control and do really dumb crap. But, game six, you guys saw it against OKC. He was big in that game. The only reason he got in the rotation was because of Rubio's injury. Obviously was great last night. And Exum's an interesting character because as much as the dunk's getting attention and he had a decent little offensive game last night, the job he did defensively against Harden was really, really impressive. And I saw a stat that the Exum defended Harden for 22 possessions last night, Harden only had 2 points on those possessions. And, you know, it got to the point in the second half when Harden came in off the bench, you know, Quinn Snyder went right to Exum, brought him in to match up with Harden. You know, they don't want to sit there and declare Dante Exum, a 22-year-old who's been hurt a lot and hasn't really established himself to be the Harden stopper. But at 6'6", with his length and his athleticism, he at least bothered him in that game. It's going to be interesting to see how that thing how that matchup develops going forward in the series.
Talking with Tim McMahon of ESPN NBA writer, does a great job covering the NBA. He's right now on the Rockets Jazz series. You mentioned Donovan Mitchell. I had said last segment before you came on that I would say the biggest takeaway I have from this postseason from an individual player is just how damn good Donovan Mitchell is, because I knew the kid could jump and I knew he'd had a good rookie year, but I watched him be the best player against the Thunder, mm-hmm. and to watch him with Rubio out, not just score, but be able to distribute as well. I mean, this looks like one of the real superstars in the NBA. How much do you think other free agents out there are taking notice of what the pieces they have in Utah with Gobert to be that rim protector and now with the budding superstar and Donovan Mitchell? Because, Tim, as you know, they're going to have max space next year to bring in a highly coveted free agent.
Well, and we'll see. That kind of depends on how they go forward this summer. But I do know, you know, even as early as December when I was out there, before that thing took off, they felt like, look, we think we're going to be able to position ourselves to be attracted to free agents. I mean, they felt, you know, they think Rudy Gobert is the kind of guy that any good player should want to play with, because what he does offensively is basically act like a left tackle, you know, create space for you. And then, obviously, defensively, he's as good of an anchor as there is. He erases your mistakes. And then Mitchell's a bona fide superstar. I mean, you hit that on the head. There is no question about it. This dude is sitting there staring down Russell Westbrook, Chris Paul, and James Harden in the first 8 playoff games of his career. Kareem and Wilt are the only guys to get to 200 points faster in the playoffs as rookies. You know, and oh, last night he breaks the Jazz franchise record for assists in a playoff game by a rookie. Some dude named Stockton had it. So when you're down, you know, when you're on list with John Stockton on one list, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Wilt Chamberlain on another list, I mean, and he just has zero fear whatsoever. I mean, he is not scared of anything, but it's not like an arrogance. It's a respectful swagger. And, man, then you talk about the skills and the smarts. The kid's unbelievable.
What do you think about the Eastern Conference series? Do you like, well, Philadelphia to bounce back and win tonight?
Yeah, I do. And you know, I think that's probably a Philly in six. But I tell you, I mean, Boston came out. And, man, Brad Stevens is an unbelievable coach. Terry Rozier has been kind of a breakthrough star in these playoffs, and obviously they've needed him because with Kyrie out. But I just think the Sixers are so talented. I mean, Simmons really stunk it up kind of in game one, but you saw what he did in the previous series. You saw what he did all year long, Simmons and Embiid. Yeah, and look, they shot terribly in game one. I don't think that's something that's going to continue that series. So I think Sixers win that series in six, maybe seven. And man, you know, the Raptors, I'll say this. I don't believe that the Raptors believe they can beat LeBron. I think we saw that in game one. And what a crushing loss, given the history, given the opponent, to lose game one on your home court in that fashion, when it sounds crazy because you've had a triple-double, but by ridiculous LeBron playoff standards, he wasn't even very good. Man, I don't see how the Raptors bounce back from that. I don't know. They might even the series, but they ain't going to win it.
Trivia question for you. In that game, the Cavs did not lead the regulation in a single minute. They took their first lead in overtime. It's only happened one other time in the last 20 postseasons. Can you name who that was?
Is this one that I'm supposed to know?
You are covering the dang game, I'm pretty sure. So, yes, you should know. It's your backyard, Timmy Mac.
Okay. No, I believe it was in your backyard. I want to say it was
my old
game
backyard.
Five. Okay, really? I was going to guess game five of the West finals the year the Mavericks won the championship. Is that not it? When Dirk had that
ridiculous.
That ain't it.
That is it. 2011.
See, that is your backyard. That was an OKC. When Dirk
that's correct.
Had that, they went on that ridiculous,
right.
like, I want to say, like, 15-2 run down the stretch of regulation. Dirk just completely dominated. I remember he hit that one where Collison fouls him. It's like this off-balance and one jumper. And then Jason Kidd hits the game-winning three when Dirk feeds him on the wing.
It's like Mavs.
Remember Collison ever playing here.
Good thing I'm in a hotel room for this break. Man, you're bringing back some good times, Timmy, because I'm going to tell you, there hadn't been a lot of them as a Mavs fan here lately. So keep on reliving the glory days, my man.
And you know what, though? That was the Thunder. Remember how that was a young Thunder, and, you know, they were all babies then. He looked at it, he said, man, KD, Russ, and Hart would be there for a generation. Hey, if you'd have put the over-under on 2.5 titles for the Thunder then, I'd have taken the over. It's crazy how things have turned out.
Sorry, Oklahoma City. Not only are we reliving the old Mavs days, we're also bringing up bad times for the city of OKC. Speaking of Oklahoma City, Tim, what did you make of Carmelo Anthony's exit interview on Saturday? Mark and I think pretty much most people, it seems to us that there is no way Sam Presti can bring Carmelo Anthony back to this organization next
year. Well,
you got to buy him out, right?
That's what I made of it. That's what I made of Melo saying, look, I don't want to be here. I didn't like this. It ain't a good fit. But I got 28 million reasons to opt in, so how are we going to settle this? And then, you know, Presti, the kind of what I made of him is like, look, this is the role we got for you. You know, if you want to come back, this is what it's going to be. Please don't opt in. And so it's going to be a game of chicken, and, you know, this is one I think that the Thunder are going to have to take it on the chin. And, you know, it's really a lot like the situation with Dwayne Wade in Chicago last year. It was not a good fit. They mutually did not want to continue it. But, I mean, Carmelo would be an absolute fool not to opt in and at least force their hand and get a buyout. Man, look, that buyout ain't going to be cheap. He's not going to leave, you know, just, you know, he ain't leaving like $10 million on the table. They're gonna have to pay him a lot of money to go play basketball somewhere else would be my guess.
We all think that's going to happen. That's inevitable. The Thunder are going to write a check for about 21 or something, like around that. That's my range finder number. Because he wants to play someplace else. What kind of, he's going to get a mid-level exception someplace, right? I mean, he's not going to sign a real
will
big
he?
Deal.
Will he? Will he get mid-level? I don't know, man.
Well, he thinks so. I mean, his agent's got a lot of
well, here's
work
the thing.
To do here.
You typically, the way those buyouts work is, you know, you don't leave any money on the table. So you know what the market's going to be for you.
Right.
And, you know, if he's a mid-level guy, which is nine-ish million, then, you know, maybe it isn't at 20. But he's not going to lose. He will make at least $28 million next year. I'll put it to you like
that.
I
agree with that.
And look, because of that, he doesn't necessarily have to be motivated to go find the team that's going to be the highest bidder. You know, he can say, look, I'll make Thunder pay me. And go somewhere where he wants
exactly.
to be for less than mid-level, which I don't know if he'd get mid-level anyway. He kind of sucks. I don't know if you guys noticed that.
Yeah, but he doesn't think that. I mean, somebody out there will be a fool to pay him a little bit more than you think. Is this all
maybe. Maybe. It's going to be very tight this summer in free agency, though.
You're right.
He's got an identity crisis. He doesn't know who he is.
No, he
does not see what the rest of the world sees.
Yeah, he thinks he is who he was. And, you know, that happens with a lot of athletes, as you guys know. I mean, they look in the mirror and they see the 28-year-old version of themselves when, you know, we see an old man in a walker.
That's right. Hey, enjoy
Tim,
your trip
have a good
to Utah.
Flight, man. We'll talk
you know
to you
I
soon.
I love me from Salt Lake City. Thanks, boys.